BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the programme and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words, and those taking part are Dillis Powell, Anne Scott James, Dennis Norton, and Frank Muir. Round one tries to test their vocabulary. Two marks if they get the meanings of these words roughly right. Beginning with Dillis Powell. Dillis, what is sake? S-A-K-E.
It's a drink.
Mm. What kind?
A Japanese.
Yes.
Intoxicant.
Yeah.
You drink it out of a small kind of cup.
Yes.
You get it poured. You have it with your meal, and it's not at all nice.
Do you remember what it's fermented from?
I haven't the faintest idea.
It was from about...
Old bootlaces.
From about 1042 A.D.
I think rice. That's good enough. It is, in fact, rice. Fermented from rice. Too much. Dennis Norton, what is a summer boy? S-O-N-O... B-U-O-Y. I think it's probably Sono Boy, not Son. S-O-N-O-B-U-O-Y. Sono Boy.
I was going to pull you up on it. It is Sono Boy. It's a thing that climbs upon your knee.
Well, it would be very odd. I don't know what it's looking for in that case, Dennis.
B-U-O-Y.
Yes.
It's in the sea.
Yeah.
Oh, it's one of those radar boys.
And what's it picking up?
Girls.
And if it gets lucky.
Signals.
Yes.
Picks
from
up.
Ships.
It's a boy for detecting submarines. It's dropped by parachute from an aeroplane, and it's equipped with a hydrophone and with radio so as to transmit the sounds, presumably of the submarines, either to aircraft or to escorting vessels. Sonny boy. And Scott James. What is a tiki? T-I-C-K-E-Y. Ticky.
A ticky? It's a noun.
Yes?
I should have thought it meant bug infested.
That would, I think, not have the E.
But it's
I think
A now. Ah, yes, I know what it is. It's a coin, isn't it?
Yes.
A threepenny bit.
Jolly good. Ticky is a threepenny bit. Frank Miller, what is an abalone? A-B-A-L-O-N-E. Abalone.
Abalone?
Mm.
Well, it's what we call this programme. You know, we meet in the pub 5 minutes before the show starts, and I said, hello. Time we went and got on with our baloney. What?
Nice, but not
What? It's shellfish.
Isn't it?
It's, we think it might be a shellfish. It's a place in America. It's an American shellfish.
Which coast and, in the main, which state?
Pacific coast.
Yes.
Oh, California.
Easy. Yes, all right, that'll do. 2 marks. It's a Californian edible mollusk, but the particular thing about it is the shell is ear-shaped, and it's also lined with mother-of-pearl, which is more than you can say for Frank Muir's ears, as far as I know. All right. Well, before we begin round two, I give each team a quotation for them to write down. I want the two women members of each of the team to study them, and at the end of the program, I shall ask them for the source of the quotation. So, first, Dillis Powell and Frank Muir, your quotation is... It's a long way to Tipperary. Anne Scott James and Dennis Norton, your quotation is, fair laughs the morn and soft the zephyr blows. And then at the end of the programme, I shall ask Frank and Dennis to give me their ideas of how these words came to be spoken or written. Round two is a round of quickies. Christian names get shortened and altered. So William becomes Bill and Richard is Dick and so on. 2 marks, I want to know what the originals of the following pet names are. Dillis Powell, Lottie.
Charlotte.
Yes. How many marks do I give this time, Valerie? Do you think one or two?
Two.
One for them, two for us.
2 marks it's got to be. Dennis Norton, Sandy.
Sandy. Sandy is the son of a beach. it's Alexander.
Alexander it is. Anne Scott James. Molly.
Molly.
Molly's Molly.
It's
not short for anything.
I'm Amelia Mollis.
Hmm? Mary.
Yes.
Mary.
How can Molly be short for Mary?
Got one more letter. All right. Mary is the original. Molly is not the diminutive, but the pet name.
The largative.
Mm. I said pet name at the start. Frank Muir.
Sally.
Sarah. It's what my daughter was supposed to be called, but I couldn't pronounce it. I can't pronounce my R, so we called her Sally. So it should be Sarah. Well, hang on a minute, I'll practice. Sarah. Sarah. Is Sally.
Sally, quite right. Well, the next round's about verse and poetry, more or less. This is nursery rhymes, which I want the teams to complete. I'll stop them. I don't want authors, because they're nearly all of them anonymous or traditional. So the marks are to be given for the knowledge of the rhymes themselves. 2 marks if they get the quotation right. Completed. Beginning with Dillis Powell. Please to remember the 5th of November.
Gunpowder, treason.
And plot.
Yes, that's not quite the end of it, but it wasn't the end of the plot either.
Well, it's enough for one rotten mark.
You get one, but not two.
Please remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder.
Please remember the 5th of November, gunpowder, treason and plot. We see no reason why gunpowder, treason should
ever
be forgot. 1.5 out of 2. Traditional since the 16th century. Dennis Norden, 30 days hath September, April, June and November.
I learned this as 30 days has September, April, June, and my uncle. and November. All the rest have 31, excepting February, which hath 28.
Alone.
That's right. All the rest have 31, excepting February alone.
Which have 28 days clear.
That's it.
And 29 in each leap year.
Absolutely right. Well done, Anne. You've got it absolutely accurate. 2 marks it is. And now it's your turn. The north wind, or wine, whichever you prefer, the north wind doth blow, and we shall have snow.
And what will poor Robin do then, poor thing? See, this is just about my mental level.
What's he go on doing?
He's got to hide his head under his wing. No. What comes in the middle?
Do you remember the next bit?
Yes, it's got one of those rotten rhymes.
Yes, that's right.
It said that he'll hide in a barn and keep himself
warm. And hide his head under his wing, poor thing.
Quite right. Child. 2 marks again. Frank Muir. 3 wise men of Gotham went to sea in a bowl.
What rhymes with bowl?
Hole.
Except in February, which has 28. Yeah.
Doesn't rhyme, you foal.
No, you don't have to rhyme with bow. You disregard that altogether.
3 wise men of Gotham went to sea in a tub.
They
went to sea in a basin. No. Pull the plug out, Jack.
Well, that's roughly what happened. No marks, I'm afraid. 3 wise men of Gotham went to sea in a bowl, and if the bowl had been stronger, my song would have been longer.
Amusing. Amusing.
They don't write songs like that anymore.
And now we have a very serious round about origins and derivations.
Sharp play.
For 3 marks. For 3 marks, if you can give me the present meanings of these words or phrases, right, and then give me the origin or derivation of them, or what they originally came from. Beginning with Dillis Powell, patent leather.
Patent leather?
Mm.
Well, it's kind of shiny leather.
Glacé, isn't it?
Yes.
Glacé
very, very,
kid.
It's very, very shiny and it cracks.
And originally, how does it come to be called patent leather?
Oh, because somebody patented it.
Well, I think that's 2.5 out of 3. It's
the bread of the other half.
I don't know.
Well, I want to know where it was patented.
Patented where?
Cordova.
No, not this time.
The patent office.
Where could it have been?
Which patent office?
The English.
No. 2.5 out of 3 is fair. It's a process by which the brilliant, highly polished finish is given to leather for shoes, and it can be for handbags, but it was originally protected by patents at the United States Patent Office. And that's why you didn't get it quite right. But 2.5 out of 3. Dennis Norton, the word untrammeled.
Well, it means unhindered,
yes,
unrestricted. And it means not having a trammel. Now, if you're going to ask what a trammel is, that's another question.
It comes in on the marks.
Is it?
I want to know what the trammel is, or was.
It's something that, if you haven't got it, it permits you to be free and...
Yeah.
It's a sort of girdle.
Oh, is it a bit of harness?
A harness?
Bit of harness.
Bit of harness.
Yes, that's... Yes.
Good.
I think you get your 3 marks. It means, as Dennis says nowadays, unhindered or unrestricted. And a trammel has got a fair number of meanings, but all of them are something that confines or restricts. And it can be a net for catching fish. And the bit I was after is a shackle used on horses' legs to teach them how to amble rather than trot. That's why I've passed it as being a bit of harness, but it's a rather odd bit. And it can be any impediment to free movement. It's also the hook in the fireplace on which you hang a kettle. And Scott James, pin money.
Well, pin money means little bits of money left over from the housekeeping, really. Money for small purchases.
Yes, and originally?
I should have thought it meant the money with which you bought your pins.
Yes, but why?
I should think a Victorian phrase.
Yes, why particularly pins?
Well, they were so small, like the pin money. Such a little tiny...
Oh, I think you've got a rather female slant on this one.
Yes, pin money. I should have thought it was essentially... you never talk about, oh, my son has pin money or my husband's pin money.
Yes. Now, you've missed one particular point, although you've got most of it right. I think 2 out of 3. It's the money that a housewife has for her own pocket money as opposed to what she supposed and sometimes does spend on housekeeping. But it was originally given by the husband to the wife definitely for purchasing pins, because pins were originally extremely expensive, and they're expensive because they were, as it were, taxed. It was a crown monopoly. And therefore, pins, instead of being things you buy very cheaply indeed, were extraordinarily expensive, and the poor husband had to give his wife extra money in order to buy pins. When pins became mass-produced, then it stopped being pin money, but the wife didn't give it up all the same. 2 out of 3. Frank Miller, the top brass.
Means a very senior military rank.
Yes. Why?
But because of metalwork on the hat, denoting a high rank.
Absolutely right. It means top-ranking executives, in business it can be, or in the army, or any other organisation for that matter. And it was coined in the last war because high-ranking officers had gilt on the peaks of their caps. Frank, I think, speaks for the Air Force. I think the army term was more often scrambled egg. Mm. And it really, it's the same as the phrase in the First World War, which was brass hat. 3 marks. Next round is famous last words. 2 marks if they get them right. Phyllis Power, who said, I shall hear in heaven?
Beethoven.
Why?
Because he was deaf.
Quite right. Beethoven, who was stone deaf in his later years, it's alleged his last remark was, I shall hear in heaven. Well done. 2 marks. Dennis Norton, be sure you show the mob my head. It will be a long time before they see its like.
Well, it's somebody who was executed.
Yes?
The field is wide.
Yeah. Be sure you show
shortly
them
after.
What?
Executed after.
Yes, yeah. He said it before he was executed. Unless the hangman was a ventriloquist. one of those chaps was French chap, who was executing the French Revolution.
Have a shot.
Danton.
Yes, it was Georges-Jacques Danton to his Danton. Executioner at the guillotine. And Scott James, see that Yule gets star billing. He has earned it. Yule is Y-U-L.
Y-U-L?
Mm. See that Yule gets star billing. He has earned it.
Only think of Yule Brynner, the only person I've heard of.
Go on thinking about him. It's a very good thing.
All these dying words are spurious. What people really say is...
All right, half a mark for getting Brynner attached to Yule. That was fairly easy. It's Gertrude Lawrence, speaking of Yule Brynner, who was appearing with her in The King and I. All right, Frank Muir. I thank the guiding providence and fortune of my life, first, that I was born a man and a Greek, not a barbarian or a brute, and next, that I happen to live in the age of Socrates.
Well, I'll tell you something about him. He was a Greek. He wasn't a barbarian. And he lived round about the time of Socrates.
Plato?
Plato.
Yes. Plato it is.
Ha ha.
We come now to the last round and go back to those two quotations I gave the team earlier on in the programme. So, first of all, for 2 marks, de Lispau, can you give me the origin of your quotation, It's a Long Way to Tipperary?
The popular song of the period of the First World War.
Yes, that's perfectly true. What about the authors?
I haven't the faintest idea.
But it was written on a popular belief by Harold Williams and Jack Judge, but there is a rival claimant. But the actual chorus of It's a Long Way to Tipperary was claimed by Alice Smythe B.J., who was an American, but it became the theme song of the British Army in the First World War. Anne Scott-James now, the origin of your quotation, Fair laughs the morn and soft the zephyr blows.
Is it the same poet as the lowing herd winds
yes.
slowly o'er the lea?
Quite right.
Gray.
Yes, Thomas Gray. That's good enough. Well, now I'm going to ask Dennis and Frank to tell me their explanation of how the quotations came into being. And on this occasion, the marks will go to whichever incredible explanation gets the longer amount of applause from the audience here in the theatre. So back first to Frank Muir with his quotation, It's a Long Way to Tipperary.
I said it this evening, just a couple of minutes before the show, actually. I was coming through the entrance hall carrying something, and the commissioner on the gate said, what's that you've got there? It's a pair of braces, isn't it? Painted mauve and starched stiff. I said, no, it's not that. It's a... Then I said this line, you see. Why this came about was that last week I was strolling home, and I was strolling along around the back of Charing Cross there, as is my will. And I felt suddenly hungry and paused at a cafe, as is my wont. I remember the cafe, it's rather a downtrodden looking place with an effort at modernity, because above the cafe it said simply in rather sort of elongated modern letters, Tons Cafe, T-O-N-S Cafe. So I pushed the door open, which went bing, and there was a counter there with some moth-eaten sandwiches and one of those coffee urns where the brass shows through the chromium like bare flesh. And a very lugubrious, weary-looking man behind. So I said, good evening, my good man. Am I addressing Tun? Of Tun's Cafe? He said, No, actually the name's Tony. He said, but there was a Y outside, you see, and it dropped off. So everybody, I'm going to put it up one of these days. I'm going to cut a bit of ply, you know, a bit of hardboard or ply, and I'm going to cut a Y and I'm going to stick it up. But it's so tiring, you know, this job here. We get people in and out here 2 or 3 a day, and it's all go, and I'm... It's a very weary and tired job, and he leant against the counter. I felt terribly sorry for him, a great lined face he had, violin-shaped, all sort of bumps and wrinkles, like a relief map of Sardinia. And I said, very good, my man, I'll have a cup of your best coffee and a cupcake. And he walked across to my table with it. A terrible, slow walk. Awful to see. He didn't sort of use his feet as feet. He sort of walked on the ends of his legs, sort of pushing his feet in front of him, like sort of two great black haddocks. It was a... He put the coffee down, and I had my cupcake, and I went home. And this morning, I woke up and suddenly realized with horror that I'd paid him, but I hadn't left a tip. And then I had an inspiration. I would give him something as a gratuity, which would ease this weariness, ease the labour of his life. I would give him a Y to put up on his sign, so that no longer would he just be Tun, he'd be Tony again. So I got my pair of braces, and I starched them till they were rigid, and I painted them mauve, because it was a mauve sign. And they were nice and thin and narrow, they suited the sign. And I was carrying those in this evening when the commissionaire said, "Hello, what you got there? Is that a pair of braces painted mauve and starched and yellow?" I said, "No, it isn't that at all. You know what it is? It's a long way to tip a weary."
Have nightmares about those feet. And we now go on to Dennis Norton, and if you remember, his quotation was, "Fair laughs the morn, and soft the zephyr blows."
By Thomas Gray.
Yeah.
"Fair laughs the morn, and soft the zephyr blows" is the actual text of a telegram which I sent to Frank Muir, which actually got him his present job at BBC Television. You see, what had happened was, when they offered him the job, he was very keen on it, but he was very worried about one thing. So you have to pass various tests whenever you join the staff of the BBC, and he wasn't worried about the loyalty test, because they're terribly easy. You know, you sort of face a thing of Richard Dimbleby, and you swear that you will serve the BBC faithfully and be clean in thought, word, and deed, and you won't sell any of the "My Word Answers to Red China," and you always need the executive wash basins you'd wish to find. That was easy enough. What he was worried about was the physical, you see, because he had an idea that he wouldn't pass the eyesight test, because he actually is a bit short-sighted. And he said to me, "What am I going to do?" He said, "Because I'll never read that eye chart that you have to read." He said, I can do the first two lines, but I know I'll fail on the third line." So I said to him, "Well, when is your appointment with this oculist?" And he said, 11 o'clock Friday. I said, "Well, look, fair enough. I'll go there Thursday evening. I'll read the third line, and I'll phone you up and tell you what it is, and you can memorize it when you go along there Friday morning." He said, "Okay." So I went along, and I read this third line in the eye chart, and made a note of it, and it's actually FLTMASTZB, you see, and I read this, made a note of it, and immediately rushed round to phone Frank, and I phoned him and couldn't get any reply. Suddenly I thought, I know what I'll do, I'll send him a telegram. So I went straight into the post office, and I just did this short, you know, on one of these telegraph forms, "Dear Frank, FLTMASTZB, best regards, Cheeky." And the post office clerk took this, and he said, "I'm very sorry, sir," he said, "but I cannot send this." And I said, "Well, find somebody who can." You know, thinking that he'd got his Morse code machine finger sprained, you know, because it's a very easy finger to sprain. And he said, "No, sir," he said, I cannot send this because we cannot send code messages." So I said, "Well, no, that's not code, FLTMAS. TZZB. He said, "Well, what is it?" And of course, I couldn't tell him, you see. So I said, "Well, it's a Greek. It's a Greek word, actually. It's flutamastaba." Flutamastaba is a very well-known Greek. You've heard about the Greeks had a word for it. Well, that is the word they had for it. And he said, "You intend to use the post office telegram to send obscene Greek message?" I said, no. I said, no, my good man." It was a habit I picked up from Frank, calling people my good man. I said, "No, not at all." I said, "Flumastaba is actually a Greek message, which means everything is good and fine. Will you be my Valentine?" So he said, "You are sending a Valentine to a gentleman called Frank Muir?" So I said, "Well, you know, it's Frank Muir is what he's known as. You know, his name is actually Frankopoulos Muiropopoulos." And he said, he receives valentines from other gentlemen. He said, I'll get on to the beep. I said, no, don't bother, please. Please don't bother. And I rushed it and thought, what the devil can I do? How can I send these letters to Frank by... And then suddenly I had a marvellous idea. I went into a grocer's shop and I asked for a packet of detergent and I swallowed a mouthful of it. And then I remembered in my mind the complete works of Thomas Gray. Because this was that detergent that forces Gray out, you see. I thought, I know how I'll send FLTMASTZB to Frank. I merely sent him a telegram saying, Frank Muir, please use the initials of following quotation, Fair Laughs the Morn and Soft the Zephyr Blows.
I couldn't see how he could possibly work round to Thomas Gray, but he did in the end. Now, this makes an extremely interesting result in which the stories result in an exact draw. They had exactly the same amount of applause from the theatre audience, and I think they well deserved it. It also brings us to a final score in which Dennis Powell and Frank Muir, nevertheless, win by 3 marks from Anne Scott James and Dennis Norden. And this also brings us to the end of this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dillis Powell, Anne Scott James, Frank Muir and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longland. The program was devised by Tony Schreien and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC.